B-Pod Studios.
The Mike Missinelli Show.
4 o'clock hour. Biggie. Brought to us by Landis Block, that 4 o'clock hour. Your one-stop shot to create a jaw-dropping outdoor paradise online at LandisBC.com. All right, we got a big football weekend. Let's bring in the man who's been following his team. He's got one rooting interest. He wants the team in red to win. His old team, the 49ers. No, he actually wants he wants the Kansas City Chiefs to win the whole thing. He's the great Brian Westbrook. He's brought to us by Landis Block. Get your jaw-dropping outdoor paradise online at LandisBC.com. All right, Brian, your general feel, when you looked at the Eagles in their last game and you looked at these teams play last week, what was the glaring difference that you saw between the teams that advanced and a team like the Eagles?
Well, I think the glaring difference, and first of all, good afternoon, Mike. Good to talk to you again. I didn't get a chance to talk to you last week. I was at my sister-in-law's wedding in Panama, so I'm back.
Oh, Panama!
Yeah, I'm back.
Nice!
It was a nice little event out there, so it was pretty cool. But, you know, the biggest difference that I see here, Mike, is that all of these teams have an identity, and they don't stray very far from that identity at all. And there was times during the season where I questioned what our identity was. What were we trying to accomplish? Here were the things that we wanted to do, and how are we going to go about doing those things? When I think about the 49ers, their identity obviously is to have a strong defensive line that's going to attack your quarterback. They may bring pressure from time to time, but they usually get after the quarterback with five guys, and they have the ability to run the ball down your throat and mix in some passes. I think of the Green Bay Packers, obviously, is Aaron Rodgers and his ability to win games with his arm. And then you look at the two, the Smith brothers on the defensive side of the ball, Preston Smith as well as Za'Darius Smith, and they get after the quarterback. So they attack the quarterback that way because their offense puts up so many points. And, of course, the Tennessee Titans, they're a power run team. Can you stop Derrick Henry from running the ball down your throat? And then Kansas City, with Andy Reid, it's almost an air raid offense in a sense. It's Patrick Mahomes with a bunch of track guys down the field attacking you relentlessly, and their defense has played well over the last half of the season. And so when I look at those four teams, I compare them to what we saw with the Eagles, and I'm saying, well, we're not even close. We're not close to those teams, and we don't have much of an identity offensively. We didn't do anything great all season long for consistently. And defensively, we just have to be better. And so that's the big difference between teams that can't win a playoff game and teams that are going to make the conference championship game.
It seemed to be team speed was a pretty big difference.
No doubt about it. When you look across the board, they have guys that, when you talk about offensively, they have guys that can make plays, make a 5-yard route, turn it to an 80-yard route. They can win offensively man-to-man, against man-to-man, as well as be very good against the zone. You see that with Kansas City. And, you know, again, we don't have that team speed. I think that they have more attacking offenses. There was questions this year where I just wondered, was our offense attacking enough? And I know Carson can make all the throws. He's smart. He's strong. He's physically gifted, and he can do all those special things. Why aren't we using him to attack downfield a little bit more? And I think the answer to that question is what you just brought up. We don't have the team speed, the ability to do that, the players that have that type of ability, and that's something that we have to figure out over the offseason, because the offseason comes quick when you can't score the ball in the way that these teams that are playing this week and can.
But there you go, over the offseason, what they need and what is feasible for them to get in a little bit. But I want to talk to you about their openings now with the offensive coordinator and the people that they're bringing in, rumored to bring in today. It's Graham Harrell, who's an offensive coordinator for USC. What are your opinions on who they need to add? Because it seems like anybody they are going to add is still going to be subordinate to the play caller, Doug Peterson.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think when I think about this team, I just thought about, you know, remind me of 2017 when they were successful. They had a lot of different people with a lot of different ideas that were involved in the actual process of coming up with the game plan. And I think that when you start getting coaches that are so familiar with the one game plan, they don't think outside of that box. And that's why they're interviewing guys like Graham Harrell, who, you know, when you look at USC, they put up points, and they were literally their air raid offense. They were attacking downfield. They were explosive with the football. They averaged 33 points a game. And so they have the ability to do that. And those ideas, listen, I don't think that the offense is going to change tremendously, but I do think having some fresh ideas, some fresh input from different people will be helpful. And I think that's what Doug is trying to do.
Let's look at some of the hires that were around the league. Matt Rhule gets the big deal, and then he woos the LSU quarterbacks coach slash offensive coordinator to go with him. Mm-hmm. What did you think of that move there?
Well, there's a couple things. Congratulations to Matt. You know, I watched him grow that program at Temple. Then I, of course, that program was in shambles in Baylor. He kind of created and built that program. And now he's going to be tasked basically to do the same thing without the ability to really recruit and find different people down there in Carolina. So he definitely is going to have a different set of tests to be able to do that. But the good thing for him is that he got, a 7-year contract?
Yep.
I believe it was 7 years. So, I mean, that says to me that David Tapper, the owner down there, he understands that this is going to be a process. And he actually said that after they fired Ron Rivera, that this is a process. It's not going to be a 1-year fix. We're going to take some time. And now with that 7-year contract, Matt Rhule has the ability to take some time without having the pressure of saying, I'm going to be 2 years and I'm going to be gone. And so that's a great thing for Matt Rhule. And I think he has a chance to build a program just like everyone else, like he's done every other step of the way as far as his development from Temple to Baylor. And now he has that same type of thing in Carolina. What's going to happen, especially because he doesn't have any NFL experience except for that 1 year as an O-line assistant up in the Giants, is that he's going to have to find a younger team and help to build that team together with him. It's hard to get veterans with a rookie head coach that hasn't been in the NFL very long at all to come in and to buy into your system. And so he's going to have to develop a team down there, a younger team, which he should be able to do in a couple years.
All right, let's look at the Eagles roster now and where they're going to get all these players, because they need a lot now. Let's start on defense first. Jackson's coming back, so that solidifies one of the tackle spots, and their ends will be back. So maybe they need one, and it replaced Vinnie Curry, and they keep Sweat around. They got to keep Sharif Miller around. The linebackers have to be completely reshuffled.
Yes.
What would you be looking for in linebackers? Draft or grab a couple guys that are seemingly always available at linebacker?
Well, I think you would draft. I mean, I think you would draft at least one, and you probably need some veteran presence there as well. And so, you know, on every team, you have to get younger. And this is no different on our team. We have to have a great infusion of young guys that can help add depth to these veterans and learn from these veterans that we have. But in particular, at that linebacker position, we don't have a bunch of guys that I'm saying, hey, I want these guys here to teach our younger guys. Now it may be just time to get an older vet to bring in that can solidify that position, and then bring younger guys around him that can run around, that can get to the quarterback. Because one of the things that we've done, because Malcolm Jenkins has been so good at getting to the quarterback and blitzing and things like that, we've only really blitzed a bunch with our secondary type of situations, with our secondary defenders. I would like to be able to blitz, send some linebackers a little bit more, and allow our secondary guys to cover just a bit. And so that's what I would be thinking. I want a fast, physical guy that can blitz the quarterback as well as stand up in the run game as well. And that's the type of guy that I think this defense should be looking for.
All right, now a corner. I think you told me before that you would draft a corner first before you would draft a wide receiver.
I think that you can get a wide receiver in the second and third round. And I think that the cornerback position is so critical that a first-round pick certainly is warranted in that position. The question is, the evaluation staff that we have in place right now has not been very good at evaluating and picking corners. And so we have to find a guy that we can count on to be healthy, but also be counting on to cover, depending on how we want to play our defense next year. And if you want to attack guys, meaning want to blitz a little bit more, which we did a little bit more this season, now we have to find some cover corners, not guys that we're just saying, oh, he'll be good enough. We have to find some guys that say, you know what, he's going to stop this receiver. He's going to, because you also look at the teams that we're playing. The Dallas Cowboys, you know, Amari Cooper didn't have a great season, but he's a good wide receiver. Michael Gallup is a good wide receiver, a vertical wide receiver for the Dallas Cowboys. The Giants have a bunch of young wide receivers that can run, and if Daniel Jones comes around, he stops fumbling the football, they have a good group of wide receivers there. And you can say the same thing for the Redskins. If Dwayne Haskins doesn't throw the ball to the other team, they got a good core group of wide receivers. So at some point, even in our division, we're going to have to be able to defend the wide receiver position. And of course, if you're talking about playing in the playoffs and things like that, you know, we're going to have to be able to slow down teams like the 49ers, who have a very good tight end. Then they got speedsters on the wide at the wide receiver position in a run game that can kill you. Same type of thing with Green Bay. And so I think we certainly need to have the ability to have the wide receiver position checked and held down. And that means we need a cornerback that can do that.
All right, let me ask you about Deuce Staley, because it doesn't seem like he's getting any play or conversation for this offensive coordinator job. You know Deuce. Does he even want to be the offensive coordinator here, or is he content where he is?
Well, I know Deuce very well. I know, and I have not talked to him during this cycle of coaching interviews and things like that. But I knew before they hired Mike Groh that he was very interested in the position, that he's been studying, that he's been researching. He's done everything that an assistant could do to make sure that they're prepared to hopefully lead up to that offensive coordinator position. And I also know that he was very active as far as helpful in the game planning the year that they went to the Super Bowl, because I used to sit with Deuce every Monday after the games, and he would tell me the game plan, the thought process and things like that. And so I'm very familiar with his work ethic. I'm very familiar with his football IQ and his acumen. I think that Deuce would be a fantastic offensive coordinator. The knock on Deuce and from many people is that, well, he's just a running back coach. He doesn't know this and doesn't know that, which I think is crazy. I think that the truth is that he knows the running game very well because he played the position. He also coached the position. But his study and his football knowledge, which I understood as a player when we played together, is so much more broad than just the running back position. He understands tendencies. He understands defenses very well. He also understands what the offense is going to need to go down the field and make different put stress on different types of defenses as well. He would be an awesome offensive coordinator, and so he certainly should be considered. It seems to me that Doug wants to go outside of the building, though.
And get fresh blood. Fresh eyes.
I think that's what Doug wants to do. And I can't blame him for that. But I think you may be also overlooking a very qualified person in Deuce Staley.
If Deuce doesn't get the job, can he stay here?
I would think that he would start making some phone calls and try to find a place, because this would be the second time that he's kind of been looked over for the position. I would think, and again, this is just my thought, not having talked to Deuce at all, that he would start making some phone calls and say, well, I will never be in line for a coordinator position here, so maybe I need to start, you know, looking elsewhere for the opportunity, you know, just for the opportunity. And we all have seen how the minority hires at the offensive coordinator position and the head coach position has gone here in the last couple of years, and it hasn't been good. And so if I'm Deuce, you have to maximize your time as well as your ability to coach. And I think that if I was him, I would start making some phone calls if that's not going to happen for me here.
All right. Let's move it on to the Sixers, because I know the Sixers are a major topic of conversation these days. They're coming off a win, but, you know, the things haven't been going peachy for them, certainly on the road. And it is, I thought that this team was going to be a bona fide contender to fulfill my prophecy of two championships before the year 20, within the year 2020.
But why? What made you so positive?
I saw a trend way back when, in 2016, where all these teams and the managements, I believed in them. I thought they were doing the right thing. And so I've just made an off-the-cuff comment. I think there are going to be two championships in this town by 2020. The Eagles knock one down in 2017. I thought sure, by 2020, the Sixers were going to win one. But now I don't think it. So when you look at the Sixers...
But Mike, that was based on the development of the team.
Yes.
That was based on the team
where they were
better.
Going. I thought where they were going was to a championship.
Right. And what you've seen thus far this season, where how many games in are we? 42 games in, is that this team hasn't developed in the way, more importantly, Ben Simmons hasn't developed in the way that you need him to develop to contend for a championship. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. That's what I'm saying. And their current state, I don't even believe they can win the East unless they add something. And then they could probably win the East, but won't win an NBA title this year. So what do you see?
Well, what I've seen, you know, over the course of just watching the games this season, and I think we already knew this, is that every good team has one guy, and most teams have two, that you say, you know what, at the end of the game or at the beginning or whenever it is, clutch moments in the game, that we give the ball to him and he can go get us a bucket, period. It ain't about him passing. It's about going to get a bucket. And what we've seen over the course of the last couple games, because Embiid hasn't been there, is that there's a big question mark. There's a big question mark of who can be that guy. It seems to me that we have a bunch of role guys and no alpha dogs, especially when Embiid is out. And I know Tobias had a big game the other night. He shot the ball very well. I think he ended up with 34 or so. Shot the ball well. And I think, you know, Korkmaz came in and shot the ball well. But it's hard to depend on that. And so the one guy that we needed to go out there and get us 25, 30, you know, whatever, 25, 28 points a game has been Ben Simmons. And he's been, you know, he had 22, 24, which is good. But it's kind of like a quiet 22, 24. It's layups in transition here and there, and he's still kind of doing the same thing that we've seen him do before, which is get in the lane, turn his back to the basket, and try to throw the ball back out to the three-point line. And we haven't seen him be dominant the way that we want to. And I think you're absolutely right in your thinking that if this team wants to win this conference, he has to be dominant. And he hasn't shown that he can be dominant yet. And, you know, that's part of his growth. That's part of the maturity of this basketball team. And we just haven't seen it yet. And that's disappointing to your earlier point.
And so they need to make a move or else I'm not seeing.
Well, okay. But let's discuss that then. I mean, what type of move
they need?
They need
a shooter off the bench. They're just not getting any impact off the bench on a consistent basis. So they're going
to
need a shooter.
You're going to have to trade a couple players to find a qualified shooter.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would make the argument that, and I like the way they defend. They defend at times. You know, I think Thibault's a good defender. I think Richardson's a good defender. I love the way they defend. I'm just concerned. I'm more concerned with their scoring with the first group. And I know, you know, Tobias has kind of figured it out, and he plays much better when Embiid without him being in there. But I'm still trying to figure out offensively if they can get enough buckets even with the first unit. And I think you're absolutely right about that second unit needing a shooter and a guy that can get him a bucket.
Yeah, and I know that you're dying to go to, well, look at that guy from DeMath. He's finally learning how to play in the NBA.
I wasn't going to go there, but I think it's true. I think he is figuring things out, and it took some time. And I'm not going to sit here and tell you that we had any more time left in Philly for him to figure it out. But I will say this. If this isn't the year and he continues to develop in 2020, then in 2021, when we hope that it can be our year, he'd probably be ready to help us. So,
yeah.
There's that.
They couldn't wait that long.
But Mike, why couldn't they wait that long? They've been waiting that long.
Because it was such angst with this guy. Every day it was something different.
There was angst with Ben Simmons too.
But Ben Simmons was at least producing in other ways. This kid, he had a broken shot. It was embarrassing.
And he quit, Brian. He quit.
Yes.
He quit. Couldn't make the doctor's appointment.
Did Joel Embiid play his first 2 years in Philly?
It's different. Joel was actually hurt.
But then,
and,
I'm sorry,
and he went to his doctor's appointment.
No, no, no. It's not different because he didn't produce on the basketball court. But he didn't produce at all.
Right, and so, I understand
that. If you're telling me that you're a coach and you're saying, you know what, tell me about his production. And you tell me about Joel Embiid's first 2 years, you see zeros across the board. Right?
Even people weren't asking questions like they were asking about Fultz. Every day it was, what's the story with Fultz? What's the story with Fultz?
And Embiid went to his doctor's appointments.
Yeah, there were never any answers with Fultz.
He skipped a doc's appointment.
What's
took him
wrong
2 weeks.
With him? Nobody knows. He's got a scapula or whatever it was.
Yeah, because no one understood the injury. I mean, no one understood the injury.
Was in his head.
But Mike, that may have been the truth. Let's just say it was. It's still an injury. Look, I mean, just because we don't understand it doesn't mean that it wasn't an injury. We understood what Embiid's injury was, but he still didn't play for 2 years.
The fact that we didn't understand it was creating angst amongst the fan base, and it was something the organization had to kind of shed. They did the right thing. It turns out that they was going to bite him in the butt. It's going to bite him in the butt. Let's take a break. We'll come back on the other side. We've got our fearless selections, Westbrook. You're right. Apparently, we have one different.
Really?
Yeah, so we'll check it out.
Mistake by you, obviously.
The NFL selections, the locks of the week coming up after this.
The Mike Missinelli Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Oh, we've come open lines on the Mike Missinelli Show, 610-622-0975. But right now, it is time for our fearless selections. The Locks of the Week, presented by McCaws and Lock Services. 50% off car keys and remotes online at 4carkeys.com. All right, Mr. Westbrook, four games on the card. Where are you going?
Two games.
I'm sorry. Yeah, four teams, two games.
Yeah, so I'm going to start in San Francisco, where the 49ers are favored by seven and a half, depending on where you look at. And I just think the 49ers defense has a way to get after Aaron Rodgers and that Packers offense, who is limited to really one receiver that's going to catch a bunch of their balls, Davante Adams. I think that front four is massive. I think they're nasty and attacking. And I think the 49ers go ahead and win this thing big against the Packers.
Wow, okay. 49ers with the cover.
49ers with the cover. And then I'm looking at the Kansas City, Tennessee. And I know that Tennessee just ran through the Ravens and they ran through the Patriots. And I think they'll have some success running the football against Kansas City, but it's not going to be enough. They're not going to have enough points. That's what you have to score against Kansas City. We saw them explode last week with 51 points and a come-from-behind victory. I don't think that the Tennessee Titans have played an offense that can score at this magnitude, not in the playoffs. And so I think the Kansas City Chiefs cover the 7 points there and win big.
Wow, so you're going two favorites to cover big numbers.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I like the last selection. I think Kansas City will end this rainbow run by the Tennessee Titans fairly easily, and Andy gets to a Super Bowl. But I think the Packs are going to play close. I think the 49ers are going to win the game. I think it's going to be a closer game. They will hang in there until the end, and maybe it's a 5-6 point win for the 49ers, but I'm going to take the Packers to cover and the Kansas City Chiefs to run over that number of -7. All right?
Okay.
There are Locks of the Week presented by McCaws and Lock Services. 50% off car keys and remotes online at 4carkeys.com. In any event, it would be wise for us to pool our money. You put $100,000 in, I'll put $10,000, and we'll go.
That sounds fair.
We'll take the favorites on the money line.
There we go. That's how you do it. Easy.
We'll make a little money, but you know we can't lose.
Yeah, a little bit more is better than nothing.
Yeah. All right. You spend some of that Persil money. That Persil money.
So you know what I did with the Persil deal, Mike? I said, listen, don't pay me any money. Just give me the detergent.
Just the product? You went product the rest of your life?
I went product for the rest of my life. Three kids. You got to wash a lot of dogs and clothes.
You know what I like? That Persil, that packet.
Yeah,
that has the three solutions in it or whatever it is. I've been using that. The clothes smell fresh.
Yeah, get the clothes nice and clean. Absolutely.
All right. Rasan in Philly. Rasan, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic.
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
What's going on, Rasan?
Big fan of the show. I listen to you guys all the time, but I had to call in. I don't understand how the fans are so negative. Like, it's like we just like got this loser's mentality that once we get something great going, we want to destroy it. Like, we fall in love with the Covingtons and the and, you know, all the no-name players, but we get a talent like Ben. It's like you want to trade him away after 23 years old. I don't understand.
Yeah, well, that's foolish. And it's just, it's out of anger. You know why people do that. They're like, they're angry that he hasn't gotten better than he is right now. They wanted the full Ben, and they're not getting the full Ben. And it is frustrating that he doesn't realize that he's not given the full Ben. So the anger of the fan goes, I trade him.
Yeah, but if I didn't know no better, I think we've been winning championships for the last 20 years. If I didn't know no better, like, you know what I mean? We've been losing for forever. And now we got something great. Like, I will lead this team together for the next 6 years. And I believe we will win three championships. But what I want to say is, I think Ben's problem is foul shooting. Everything go back to foul. If he becomes a 75% foul shooter, I truly believe you'll see a difference Ben in the fourth quarter. I think he shies away from that fourth quarter because he don't want to go to the foul line. He feels like it's a waste of possession. So he kind of defers a little bit.
Yeah, well, think about that for a second. That's a great player that does that? A great player is afraid to go to the foul line? That's why he defers?
Mm-hmm. I believe.
Well, that's not good. That's what frustrates fans.
No, that's not good at all. But I believe I wouldn't give up on him. He's 23. What
the Sixers are not going to give up on him. You know that. It's just fans barking. Sixers aren't going to give up on him.
But what are you going to look like at 27? 27 is still in his prime.
I can't wait till he's 27 for him to shoot his shot, Rashad. Come on.
I'm waiting. I'm not budging.
He doesn't frustrate you by not shooting the ball?
He does frustrate me. But I believe I'm more – my attention is in Beeb. If Embiid can be, we know he can be. They can win a championship this year.
Yeah, they ain't winning that championship. No.
There's nobody in the East that I fear in a 7-game series.
Yeah, they're going to beat the West, too, with this team? They don't have any scores off the bench. You said they're going to win a championship.
And that's another point I wanted to make real quick before you cut me off. I would want to see Burt move to the 2-guard. I believe he's the best. I think they need some help outside of, you know, bringing in somebody. But I believe Burke right now can give him something scoring-wise. I would take the ball out of his hand, just let him just go off. I would move him to the 2 with the second unit and just let him just score, because I believe he can score.
6-1.
That's my opinion, man.
He's 6-1 guard. Listen, I like the way he moves it off the bounce. I don't think he's a premier scorer.
No, I agree with that. They definitely need help off the bench, but I believe they can win the East this year. I do believe that. But Embiid, it has to be Embiid. He has to take them there.
All right.
And like I said, I enjoy the show.
Thanks,
Rasan.
I listen
to you guys all day.
I appreciate it. Now, Tyrone thinks they win the East too with this team. I just don't.
I don't know why he's taking Ben completely off the hook and just putting it all on Embiid.
Yeah, he's taking
Ben. He can't take Ben off the hook. He can't do that.
You know, Ben should never be off the hook. Obviously, you draft him, and you talk about a transcendent player. He has to be that. But here's a couple of things I was thinking of, and you kind of mentioned it, Mike. You said if Ben is going to be a special player, how can he ever have fear of failure? You know, that mm-hmm. jump shot, not getting to the foul line, things like that. He doesn't want to show people that he is not strong at shooting a jump shot. Great players don't have that fear.
Well, here's my other problem with it, Brian. He seems satisfied to be taken off the ball in crunch time. I'm going, he's okay with it. he's okay with standing in the corner while they put the ball in somebody else's hands at crunch time. And I'm going, well, that should make you angry, dude.
Well, that should make you get back in the gym and work even harder on the game so they never take. You know, one of the things that I did during my career was that when I came in, people said you're only a third down back. And so I learned every piece of the offense so that I can play every down. And then I wanted to make myself indispensable. So I never they never felt that they wanted to take me off the field. And so that's the attitude that Ben should have. They should never take the ball out of your hands. You're the best dribbler on the team. You're the quickest. You can defend all those different things. You shouldn't have the fear of failure of not shooting the shot.
Yeah, see, that's the thing that makes me nuts. That like the fact that they have to keep him off the ball so he doesn't get fouled in crunch time, that doesn't bother him?
That should.
It doesn't bother him when people around the league have a nickname for guys on their team that don't shoot. They call him Ben Simmons. He said that doesn't bother him?
Absolutely should.
All right.
But let me ask you this, though. Is there any responsibility for the coach in this situation?
Of course. But the coach has now gotten so frustrated that he's now going public with his plea.
Yeah.
He comes out to one day, he goes, I'd like to see him take 1 3-pointer a game. Well, that didn't happen. Then he comes back and goes, well, I obviously failed at that. So he's addressing it publicly. He's throwing up his hands going, I've tried everything. Maybe if I do it publicly, something will happen. Well, you know what the response was? Ben on Instagram is touting his all-star contributions, his all-star credentials. See that?
But that also makes you question. And listen, I'm not here to tell anybody that anyone should get fired, but it also makes you question the coach just a little bit and how much they respect the coach and how much that coach is pushing his star players, Ben and Joel, to be the better players than they are currently. That's what the one thing
maybe,
you have
maybe
to
he's been too permissive to Ben. I don't know. But
there's no doubt about that.
But maybe he's also has tried everything. You know, I don't know. I'm not inside. 610-632-0975. We'll come back with your phone calls after this.
The Mike Missinelli Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
The Fanatic.
We're 47 on the Mike Missinelli Show. 97.5 The Fanatic, NBC Sports Philly. Sharing the hour with Brian Westbrook will be with us till 5 o'clock. Big NFL games coming on this weekend. Let's get back to the phones and talk to Nick in Collegeville. Nick, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Nick.
What's up, gentlemen?
How you doing? How you doing?
I feel like I should talk NFL, but, you know, because you have the esteemed Brian Westbrook there. But this Ben Simmons thing is, you had two back-to-back callers. One guy right before 4 o'clock, he used a term. He said, we shouldn't trade Ben because it's inevitable that he's going to get better. Okay, and your last caller started the conversation saying, oh, I don't understand why the Philadelphia, you know, Philadelphia always wants to, they love Covington, but they hate somebody like Ben Simmons. And then when you pressed them on it, he said that Ben's afraid to shoot the free throw shot.
Mm-hmm.
He's afraid to shoot a basketball. He hides in the fourth quarter. But this is the guy he wants to keep and bet his bank on. You know, the guy that we know that we should keep.
Well, he thinks it's going to change.
What?
And I have to believe it's going to change too. That's why I'm not getting rid of him.
But, and here's, I'm sorry, Ann. Not it, Mike, here's my thing.
Huh?
Year one, when he was a rookie, we said his potential and upside. Right, Wes? Right, Brian? His potential and upside is sky's the limit.
Mm-hmm.
Then year two, we said, well, you know, it takes a little bit of time.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are, year three. Let me ask you guys something. Forget about what we thought, where he was drafted, and who he was supposed to be. You have NBA players that nicknamed non-shooters Ben Simmons.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so forget about everything we know about this guy. 2-5, you like to call him. Just say this random
two
guy.
2-5
steps on the court, and you've seen him play now for 3 years.
Uh-huh.
What is your eyes? You're a basketball player. You played ball many, many years.
Yeah. Here's what I'll tell you. Here's what I'll tell you about getting better. Getting better only means to have the gumption to take the shot. That's not a big thing to get better with. You see what I'm saying? It's not like he can't shoot it. He shoots it all the time. We've seen him practice shooting it. The stroke is not that bad. Getting better means mentally just letting the trigger go. Now, let me give you Giannis, okay? Best player in the league right now?
Yeah.
Giannis didn't become the best player in the league until he was fifth year.
But he was never here's the difference between him and Ben. I've been saying this for years. He was never afraid.
Well, never afraid. Look at his first 3 years. His first 3 years, he wasn't as good. His numbers weren't as good as Ben Simmons.
But he wasn't afraid of being bad. He wasn't afraid.
How do you know that? Would you follow his every dribble? He didn't blossom. He didn't blossom until age 25. The best player in the league, he's 25. That's two more years now with Ben.
Mike, listen. we're trying, you know what it is? We know that if Ben doesn't become what we need him to become, it's going to crash and fall. And that's why we keep on saying, oh, no.
I agree with you, but here's the thing,
like
Nick.
You said it last year. You said it on a Thursday, and I called you, and you said, I'm done. This guy's
I never said I'm done ever when it came to Ben Simmons. In fact, these trades are ridiculous. There are two players that I would trade him for right now. So in other words, I'm taking the chance that getting better means all he has to do in his mind is let the shot go. Now, I'll say, Giannis, when he was 23, 26.9 points a game. All right, this Ben's 23 now. So Giannis is ahead of the game. Giannis has taken charge to be a 27-point scorer when he was 23 years old.
On offense, Ben, better defensively than Giannis ever was still right now.
Yes.
Better passer, but way behind offensively. And he needs to get there, but that doesn't mean he can't.
Right, because getting there, it's not that big a fix other than just let it go.
Right.
That's the fix. It's not like you have to work on your handle or you work on your defense.
Well, that's what the fans want to see. That's what people that in Philadelphia just want to see. You don't have to make it. Just shoot it. I mean, that's what we wanted to see coming into the season. That was how we were going to judge whether Ben got better or not. Was he willing to take the shot? And we've obviously proven through the half the season, he's just not willing to do that. And to many people's point, this was kind of that year where we're going to say either Ben's going to shoot the shot or we're losing, or we're going to lose faith in Ben.
Exactly. And I'll say this. If he goes through next year with the same thing, well, then it's time to go. It's never going to happen.
Well, Mike, you said that last year.
I kind of said it last year, but I'm giving him one more year. You know, because
we don't have a choice.
I can't imagine that he's never going to do it.
I feel the same way. I would say this. It's hard for me to imagine that he would have gotten to this point and still not have done it.
You're right. We all expected that he would shoot it this year, so he's not going to shoot it this year. Now, he's not going to make the All-Star team this year. The Sixers aren't going to win the East. Mm-hmm. So if anything can dawn on him, maybe it's this year.
Well, I would say what should have dawned on him is the last 2 years of the playoff performance where they needed him to score, and he still was reluctant to do that. That should have been a hammer to the head to say, I have to be better in the offseason with just allowing myself to be the freedom to shoot the basketball. Uh-huh. That's what I would have said.
Yeah,
and Embiid took a lot of that heat because everybody, and not that it was wrong, but it was Embiid was sick, Embiid allowed Ben to hide some in the offseason in that way, because everybody was focused on Embiid getting sick and people weren't focused on it. I think this year, Brian, to your point, if they lose and when they lose, it'll be directly on Ben. They won't be looking at other people.
I'll say this. That Instagram stuff where he's touting his stats and he's lobbying to make the All-Star team is shameless. That tells me he is absolutely doesn't care or is oblivious to the criticism that he receives nationwide, including with his own peers, that he would get, like, he would tout the stats that he's an All-Star. Like, that's shameless. I don't understand it, how you could not shoot a basketball and still lobby for you to make the All-Star team as if nothing's wrong with your game.
Yeah. It's crazy to see. and it's hard to explain.
I like to live inside that dude's head, man, with a little rowboat. I go to different canals to see what's in there.
the other players on that team are frustrated with Ben as well.
Of course they are.
And they see that their opportunity to get to where they want to get to. They're going to need him to step his game up. And unfortunately, that pressure still hasn't been enough for Ben to start, at least shooting the basketball.
Yep. All right, man. Football, hope your boy Andy wins.
He better win. He better win, because if he doesn't win, now you got a whole different conversation about Andy Reid.
So. Yeah. All right. We'll see. Thanks, Brian. Have a great weekend.
Take care.
Brian Westbrook joining us on Football Friday for the hour. And we'll take a break. We'll come back. 5 o'clock hour. Yesterday was wild and woolly.
Well, was it?
Yes. So as we close out the week, let's see what we can do here in the 5 o'clock hour on the Mike Missanelli Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.